you live from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's a guy who does not believe in podcasting commando. I am Rob Cicerino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to talk about the Survivor 39 Island of the Idols premiere. And we have a great treat for you because I have here with me in the studio the man who has been camping out here, just like we're like Robin Sandra up here right now, that we are your guides to take you through everything there is to know. You know him from all of our Big Brother coverage of covering 99 days of the Big Brother season. He and I were out at the Big Brother finale on Wednesday night, but he is a Survivor expert as well. And here to talk about the season 39 premiere with me is Mr. Taryn Armstrong. Taryn, how are you?
Hey, Rob. I got a proposal for you.
Yeah. So you Boston Taryn?
Boston Taryn. You know I like my yogurt.
Yes.
I have a challenge. Can you beat me at a yogurt eating contest?
I think I can.
Rookie mistake.
A competitive.
Terrible decision.
Competitive person.
You need to be chastised for this, Rob.
This is entrapment. You offered me this challenge and then I did what you said.
Rob.
And now.
This is Survivor. Get used to it.
Okay. All right. Taryn, how are you holding up today?
I'm doing great. We're both incredibly sleep deprived, so I wish people could see the scene right now as we're both like stumbling through this process.
Right. I mean, Taryn does not believe in any use of any substances. I am heavily caffeinated here after a late night at the Big Brother house. I said on the exit interview this morning, I ended up watching this episode about 4 o'clock in the morning. Held my attention. I did not fall asleep. Yes, I rewatched it this morning. And so really excited to get to talk about this. I thought this was a really fun premiere of the show and a lot of stuff that I want to talk through in terms of what worked, what didn't work so great, what we're excited about. And so that's what we're going to do here in this podcast. Of course, the Big Brother fans know that Taryn and I have over 2.5 hours of Big Brother interview for you to check out from the backyard, in addition to our Big Brother recap. But switching gears to Survivor, just to set up the week here. So last night, Stephen Fishback and Dominic Bate got together for the know-it-alls. I had an exit interview. I wasn't sure if I was getting the exit interviews this season, if they were going to be back, but I'm very excited that they are. I spoke with Ronnie Barta this morning, and he was very fun to talk to. I think that I was very surprised that I was very happily not spoiled. Also, I was not spoiled when I watched the show at 4 o'clock this morning. Did you make it through the watching the show so delayed and not getting spoiled?
Yeah, I wasn't spoiled at all. The only thing that I was really curious about was who his favorite survivor was.
Yes. Did he say?
I don't know.
Okay. All right.
He needs to answer the question.
Yeah. Oh, from when he's talking about Running Up Reno. Yeah. Apparently Ronnie, Ronnie Barta says I met him at Running Up Reno and says that maybe that I may have not been in a state of mind that I remember that conversation. So, you know, if he remembers it clearly, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. So exit interview is up as well. And then we also have, I'm going to talk to Reem Daly tomorrow. Very excited to catch up with Reem, hear what she has to say about everything that's going on. And then we'll have one more Survivor podcast. And we are marrying the Wiggle Room with This Week in Survivor History. So that's going to be coming up on Monday, where I'm going to have the Wiggle Room and the Wand Off with Josh Wiggler. And then we're going to check in with Jordan Kalish, and we're going to play This Week in Survivor History. That's all going to be the podcast coming out Monday night. So that's the schedule for the week this week, Taryn. And so very excited to get into everything. Of course, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Robin's podcast number 8 on the iTunes TV and film charts. I appreciate you guys subscribing at this point in time and telling your Survivor fan friends to subscribe to Robin's podcast at robhasawebsite.com/iTunes, or for just our Survivor coverage, including the stuff on the Rehap Ups, that's robhasawebsite.com/Survivor Podcast. Not to mention also a great time to jump in as a patron of Rob's podcast, probably 5-6 Survivor podcasts a week coming your way, and brand new pop sockets for new patrons coming in for the next 2 weeks. But I'll talk a little bit more about that later. All right, Taryn, Survivor 39, it's here.
Yeah, I just hope you don't complain to Reem about being sleep deprived. I feel like she'll help none of it.
Dude. You know what it is like when I was on the edge? I miss Ray. I'm very, very excited to hear what she has to say. But this was a really fun first episode. I really did enjoy this. There was some interesting wrinkles here. We'll talk about Ronnie and we'll talk about the tribal council. But I guess let's just talk through the Island of the Idols. I know that there had been a lot of talk about it, but we got to see it in practice. Taryn, what'd you make about the Island of the Idols?
You know, there's been a lot of criticism about this concept leading up to the season. I wasn't as down in it, I think, as a lot of people were. I enjoy Boston Rob. I'm the crazy person that liked Redemption Island.
You're a smart guy, Taryn.
You know, I am a smart guy, and so that I recognize the greatness. Sandra's a really entertaining character as well. And so, seeing them together, I think there's fun to be had there. I come from Big Brother. There was a season where there were coaches.
Right. Well, this is perfect timing that we have you here. Mm-hmm. And of course, Big Brother 14, Steven mentioned it on the Know-It-Alls, but one of your heroes, Dan Giesling, was somebody who came into the game. He actually tweeted at me this morning, like, so Rob and Sandra, are they coming in this game?
Yeah, where's their reset button?
Where's their reset button? But Taryn, as much as Mike Bloom swore in the preseason, they told him up front, and when him and Josh went to Fiji, of course, both of them have outstanding coverage up as well about their first 3 days. I'm sure we'll get into it more with Josh in the Wiggle Room coming up on Monday. But Mike Bloom said they swore to him, and we even saw the Survivor Oath.
Yes. The oath, or was it the oath or the pledge?
I think it was an oath.
The oath pledge.
Yes. The oath of Survivor. And
of idols.
The oath of the Island of Idols. And the oath said that we are not your competitors.
Yes, we cannot win $1 million. I hope that doesn't extend for future seasons.
Yes, yes. Now, should it be our job to look at like all of the loopholes in that like
fine print?
Yeah, in the fine print there on the Survivor Oath.
I absolutely. Hey, you'd be dumb not to. That would be a rookie mistake, Rob.
Hey, I showed you the oath, but you didn't read the fine print. That was a rookie mistake.
Yeah. Well, what happens when Jeff Probst says, "Actually, this season it's $999,000 is the grand prize." Uh oh.
No, you didn't learn to read the oath, but now you learned a lesson.
this is your lesson.
This is the lesson.
This is the lesson for the players and for the viewers.
Always read the fine print. Make a mistake. Don't read the fine print.
I thought this was very fun to have Rob and Sandra in the mix. I know there was a lot of Survivor fans, and I know the former Survivors were not really in love with this idea. The giant heads, I think, were a turnoff for some people. But
yeah, that's a mistake. It's a mistake to be turned off because it's amazing.
You love the giant head.
You know what? Go hog wild. Dominic last in the Survivor Know-It-Alls was talking about how wacky Big Brother is. Let's get us on even playing field so I don't have to feel so bad about my show.
Yes, you don't like it when the Survivors come in on their high horse and talk about, look, the Survivor is a serious show. You have like, you know, farting seagulls and but then you see the giant heads and you say, well, maybe, you know.
Honestly, I feel the exact same way.
People with giant paper mache heads shouldn't throw stones.
I just think that if I have to suffer a wacky show, then everybody should have to suffer a wacky show.
I'm queuing up the Survivor Oath in should we have a podcast oath? Let's just listen to the oath and how it works.
First things first, the Oath of the Idols. We are the Survivor Idols. We're not competing. We do not vote. We cannot win the $1 million prize. Our job is to mentor you in the game of Survivor and then offer you a chance to test what you've learned. Everything that happens here is intended to make you a better Survivor player. You can think of this place as a Survivor boot camp.
Okay, there you go.
Hold on. Listening to this again, I feel like I've heard this. I'm pretty sure this is the same oath that Rob gave the players of Redemption Island. I'm pretty sure this is again going to be one big test. I'm pretty sure that's exactly what he said to them. Yeah. Look, I'm here to mentor you.
Yeah. When I first heard that they were going to have a Survivor season where Boston Rob was going to, you know, tell the players what to do all season.
Yeah.
I said, what, they're going to rerun Redemption Island? No. But this is fun. I think that Rob and Sandra there, I really did enjoy this. I feel like that the thing that really hit was Rob and Sandra at Tribal Council.
Yeah.
In the secret spy shack,
Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, and this was mentioned on the Know It Alls, but also Josh Wigler talked to Jeff Probst, and that Jeff Probst revealed that Jimmy Fallon came up with this idea.
Oh boy!
Ironically, Jimmy Fallon would be the worst person to be in the spy shack bunker in the Fallon bunker because he always breaks and can't stop laughing.
Yeah.
And you would easily be able to tell if Jimmy Fallon was watching you from afar.
Jeff, do I hear giggling?
Yeah. Somebody can't stop laughing. Is Jimmy Fallon behind there? You got me.
Oh,
yeah. So, Taryn, do they have a clear view or are Rob and Sandra watching a monitor? Like, it didn't seem like that they were like peering through like a peephole.
Yeah.
I wonder if they have a monitor.
It looked like they were in a closet. So I'm pretty sure it had to have been some sort of monitor.
And they weren't like whispering super low either. Mm,
yeah. I'm picturing them like a good 200 feet away in a tiny little shed. That can barely fit the both of them. And there's like a little GoPro in there to capture.
Yeah. I think we need to see if like Rob and Sandra are sort of, maybe is there like a one-way mirror? Is it like some sort of like a police lineup where they can just see straight in, but the contestants can't see them back?
I don't know. You know, they let Rob and Sandra start building their shelter a couple days early, right? Maybe this was, they were like, hey, Rob, we want you to be able to watch Tribal Council, but you're going to have to build some sort of device or shack that will allow this to happen.
So Rob and Sandra, they are at the Tribal Councils. Do they need to be at the Tribal Councils? So it was fun to see them there. But in terms of what they're doing, if they're just teaching people different things about the game, how important is it that they then see how the game unfolds?
Here's the thing. I think that they might not need to be there all the time, but I can see where this could get really fun, especially if they have like, you know, taught their protege and now they're in tribal, they're trying to do it. And they're like, oh, no, they're screwing up or, you know, something along those lines or, oh, they're doing really well. And just having somebody there to react to what's happening in tribal is always fun. We're seeing that a lot more with when the jury is finally starts to get involved. But to see Rob and Sandra there actually being able to comment on it can be fun, but only when it's good, right? So we don't need to always be cutting to Rob and Sandra if there's nothing good to show there. That's what I would be concerned about. But if there's like good, fun reaction shots from them, like I'm into it.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. It's something that came up with like the really big jury on the Edge of Extinction, where we end up where I think that some of like the like historic Survivor moments, like Eric with the immunity necklace, end up playing bigger because not that could be bigger, but that you have the reaction shots from all the different jurors. And it's a little bit like a sitcom that has like a laugh track. Mm-hmm. So that when you are like as humans, like when we're seeing the reaction of the people that are the audience for that, that, that I think that that also heightens what we're seeing and feeling about that. So having Robin Sandra as a de facto jury in the pre-jury phase of the game, I think that does heighten all these tribal councils that we're going to have.
Yeah, it's. I think it could be fun, and you know, with Extinction, I did feel like the jury was sometimes overused with their reactions, and sometimes they were like, it was like, all right, you're going crazy every single episode. It's not it's not special anymore. But Rob and Sandra seem a lot more low key. It seems like they're going to be reacting to things.
They don't have to ham it up.
Exactly,
they're in every episode.
Yeah, and you know, who knows where this goes? I love the idea of, you know, live commentary on, you know, tribal gameplay. That could be interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So we saw in this episode that we're talking this through, Elizabeth ended up going to the Island of the Idols, and I was surprised. She seemed to know a lot about Boston Rob and Sandra in terms of she immediately knew,
their names,
busts, their names, and knew a lot about them. It was very hyped up to me. I don't know how well known Rob and Sandra are. If you are somebody who is super new to Survivor, I mean, Rob hasn't played in 16 seasons before this, that Elizabeth as an Olympic athlete, I didn't know she was had this much of a Survivor knowledge base. That if I was going to guess out of the cast, I think that she would be one of the people that might have the least amount of Survivor knowledge coming in.
Yeah, I mean, I think they did cast a season of fans for the most part. If I'm remembering correctly, I think the vast majority of them are pretty big fans of the show. So I expect that perhaps one of the reasons that that is the case is so that they would recognize and appreciate Rob and Sandra. I also think that, I don't know, I guess it also, no, they probably wouldn't have. They're not going to let somebody walk in and be like, who are these guys?
Yeah.
So
maybe at Ponderosa, they might have been showing some Rob and
Sandra seasons. Yeah. They made sure that these people knew who they were.
Yeah. Watch Heroes versus Villains. Yeah. Because Elizabeth says in her pregame bio that Kara is the player that she's most like, which is somebody who's from a very recent season. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth was somebody who I did not get a good feel for in the preseason. I really liked her in this episode. I thought she was a fun character.
Very full of energy, yeah.
Very full of energy. And she really has this harrowing experience on the Island of the Idols, where she is put to the test by Boston Rob. Can she make a fire can she make fire faster than Boston Rob?
Yeah. And look, I can tell you firsthand, Boston Rob is an intimidating guy.
You've had a run in with him.
Yeah. You don't want to displease him. You feel like, oh, no, don't be disappointed in me, Boston Rob. Don't do it. And so I was like, man, because when she fails the test, he's so hard on her.
Hey, what were you thinking? You could never beat me.
That's how I view my Survivor experience. That
right?
was my test. That was my test. Rob never said,
come on, Sestanino, smarten up.
Yeah.
What are you thinking? This is your lesson.
I've taken that lesson with me into life.
Exactly.
And that's why I never get complacent now.
Yeah, now you podcast about Survivor instead of playing it. You leave.
Leave. You belong talking about Survivor, yeah. Not playing it. That's your lesson. Don't forget it.
Playing your own game.
You play your own game.
So, I like this. That is it fair? Rob said in the episode that he thought that like any rookie Survivor player, Elizabeth took the first offer that was given to her. Should she know that everything is negotiable on Survivor?
Yeah, I thought there was zero chance I would have thought, oh, let me negotiate with this. I'm learning all of the rules. And now all of a sudden, like, I'm the asshole if I negotiate, right? Like, I'm the one being difficult with production. Like, yeah. Hey, production, though, that would be like finding an idol that has specific rules and being like, hey, though, maybe I use this one past the final five. What do you think?
Yeah. That being said, negotiations have been a part of Survivor, most notably, though, in interactions with Jeff Probst.
Yeah.
We've seen often, you know, rewards and people. Jeff's like, all right, pick two people to go deal. Like, oh, Jeff, can I pick three? Can I take three? Like, that's a negotiation.
True.
You know, we had everything with Angelina and the rice and, you know, even going back to, you know, hey, oh, we want more rice with Drew Christie. Okay, here's, you know, here's what we're going to offer you. No, this is that's a low ball offer. So there are negotiations in terms of dealing with Jeff on Survivor. My brain would not go to, hey, all right, this is the offer from Rob and Sandra on the Island of the Idols. Let me see if I can haggle with them.
Yeah, I think that they have opened themselves up to a big headache in future seasons.
Yeah.
Every single time. You have to now. Every single time you read any advantage thing or you get any sort of offer, you're always going to have to be like, I don't know, though. What, you got anything better?
Mm-hmm. Let me say, though, as much as I like that, I much prefer the hosted version of Ghost Island. I enjoy having Rob and Sandra on the show. I did feel like the fire making.
Yes.
I don't think that people learning how to make fire. Well, first of all, I don't think people making a fire, unless like elimination is on the line, is super exciting. And I don't think people practicing making fire is really great TV.
This was a big miss. This was the bad point of the episode.
I agree.
Yeah, there was a literal montage where they were doing dissolve cuts about like, and so now she's doing this, and it was like, like this is something that everybody does on the show like all the time, and we're seeing like this inspirational montage of her learning a training session, and. There was nothing compelling about this. It was just, not into it.
I thought that this was the most boring part of the episode where Elizabeth is learning how to make fire. And then ultimately she's going to go up against Rob. But the whole rest of the episode, both of the tribes, I thought the cast was really great. Mm-hmm. And I loved seeing everything that was going on. And it was so exciting. And then I felt like that this was too much time on this.
Here's what if they have to do something concrete, like building a fire, like teaching somebody how to build a fire, then do that off screen. Be like, okay, now she's going to go off with Sandra to learn how to build a fire. Then we cut away to what's happening on the tribe. Then we come back. All right. She's been taught by Sandra.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's time to put her to the test. You know, I just take out that one montage and that I think helps solve a lot of it. Because when Rob and Sandra are talking to her and negotiating and all of that stuff, that was still pretty interesting. And hopefully now that we've got the first one out of the way, we can be a little more succinct in the future, you know, segments. But I think there's stuff to be improved on here.
And to me, there was not really a big surprise there. I guess in talking with Josh and then hearing, you know, Josh's interview with Jeff Probst. So the example that Jeff gave of like what the test might be was exactly what the first episode was. Mm-hmm. And then it's down to, and then if they lose to Boston Rob, then the test might have been, well, that was foolish for you to even go up against me, for you to even go up against Rob. And so like, but that was like the exact scenario that Jeff outlined. So if I'm coming into this completely blind to it, maybe it was more of a surprise, but that was already planted in my brain that was probably what was going to happen if somebody went into a fire making challenge against Boston Rob.
Yeah. I'm not sure what they're going to do from here.
I don't know what they do next.
Yeah. Right?
So I don't know what another thing, like, could they take them to go spearfishing? But that's not a critical part of the game.
Yeah.
Like on like the fire making. So I don't know necessarily what are the other things they could be doing.
Well, weirdly, this also relates to Dan Gieseling again, because there was a time on Big Brother Canada where
spearfishing,
they brought him in to do a spearfishing segment, And he went into the house with the final
Canada one, right?
Yes, with the final five.
Yes.
And or it might have been final four, actually. And he just spent the night there. And that was really interesting because Dan Gieseling is the best Big Brother player who's played the game. And so to see him come into a game,
even after Dr. Will took the time to, you know, talk with you last night.
Dr. Will's fantastic. I loved chatting with him. Facts are facts. So Dan was in the house and he got the chance to talk with the players, and he would quiz them and interrogate them about their position in the game and ask them questions and get them thinking about things that they hadn't really thought of before. Mm-hmm. And that was really compelling to watch because it really mattered in the context of what was happening. And so I'm wondering if we might get a little bit of that in future episodes once social dynamics start to form and people come in genuinely asking for like advice about, I've got this person here, I've got this person here, like, I don't know where to go, and getting prompting questions from somebody like Boston Rob about like what they should be doing in the game.
Didn't Dan also do something like with the king on the chessboard for Emmett, of like he put like a red something like on the chessboard?
Yeah, well, Dan
hashtag chess not checkers.
Yes, Dan recognized that there was one player in the game that was just had a complete hold on everything. Mm-hmm. And, maybe a little bit controversially, probably the reason why that person ended up losing control because of Dan's questioning and getting people to think about things. But it was really interesting. And so that's what I would like to see.
Well, that's a good point. So, we're coming off of, some recent seasons, like just let's go back to Ghost Island, which was, this season has borrowed from the Ghost Island dynamic, but we had scenarios where Dominic and Wendell had a real stranglehold on things going down to the end of the game. But if certain players could have gotten their act together, if Laurel and Donathan were on the same page about wanting to flip at the same time with certain other players like Sebastian and like with Angela, if they all could have been on the same page, do you feel like that with a Robin Sandra in the mix, is that better or worse if sort of an inorganic force is aligning people to take out the power players in the game?
I don't mind it as something that is introduced at the beginning of the game. Everyone knows that Robin Sandra are in play. They will be giving advice, and that you are going to have to work around them. And in some cases, when you go to Robin Sandra, try and play into it and try to play them and give them an impression of yourself. Not necessarily that they would advise somebody not to trust you based on information they got from that player, but if you give them a perception that you're an easygoing, loyal player that's just going to ride down to the end, that's probably going to influence how they perceive you and then how they give advice based on other players surrounding you. I think that being a component of the game that you know is there could be really interesting.
Could be really interesting, but I'm sort of two minds of it. Dominic and Wendell, then how do they use Boston Rob to be able to get advice? Because I'm sure that something that Boston Rob would know particularly well is, hey, it's Redemption Island, it's Survivor All-Stars, I'm in the power position, people are trying to undercut me. And how do I play these people against each other? I'm sure Rob actually would have some really sound advice about that, considering that sort of how he plays the game. On the other hand, I do feel like that, is there any conflict of interest? It's almost like that I am going through a divorce and my wife and I have the same lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's. And, probably what I'm saying
is not getting divorced, despite what 54% of the listeners might think in the census. I don't know if that's quite the same analogy, but you have people. Rob's not necessarily like a mediator. He's somebody who's giving advice to both sides of a war.
Yeah. And it probably what I'm saying is a little bit blasphemous for like the really hardcore Survivor purists. I am a Big Brother purist, and I hate twists that are added to the game that screw the game up. And so I can understand that viewpoint 100%. For me, Big Brother is once a year. It takes place over the course of 3 months, and if you screw it up, it's really gonna ruin the entire year, and it's gonna ruin the entire summer. I view Survivor as a format that you can experiment with a little more. And I don't mind the experiments as much as some Survivor players. I didn't mind that they experimented with Extinction Island. I wouldn't love to see it come back. I didn't think it would work out, but I don't mind them rolling with certain ideas at certain times. And so this may or may not be fair. It may or may not be interesting or compelling, but and you know, we're talking about a completely hypothetical situation at this point. It may not even be anything like this, but I'm interested in how that impacts the game and the ramifications that it might have if it works out well.
Okay. One of the things from the episode was Elizabeth comes back from the Island of the Idols and she has lost her vote and she has to come back and she's going to end up telling her tribe a story about where she was. Michael Butler O'Rear Jr. has a question, and it's something that I was thinking as well. Was Elizabeth not allowed to talk about Robin Sandra? That seems like the only thing that would explain why she didn't. Taryn, can you think of any other reason that would make sense that she didn't just tell the tribe about the Island of the Idols?
Here's what happened.
Yes.
She went with her gut when deciding whether or not to challenge Rob. And then he berated her for making the wrong choice and said, you gotta go with your gut. And so she was all discombobulated. And she said that this is normally not who she is, but she feels like she has to step outside of herself because she is feeling like she just made the really wrong decision. And now if she wants to do well at Survivor, she has to figure out, how do I not be me? Because me just messed that up. And so she's like, well, I mean, it's Boston Rob. He lied a lot. I gotta come up with something. I think psychologically that's where it came from.
So you think that the players will be allowed to tell?
I think, I mean, the way that she described it was like, I made this choice to lie. That's what I got from it. At least I don't see any reason why she wouldn't be able to describe what happened.
Because it seems like that there's no inherent advantage about knowing what the Island of the Idols is. That, it's a thing you go to and then Rob and Sandra give you a test. It's not even seemingly like you could game, at least at this point in time, a way to get back there of that, like in the early days of Exile Island, if it's like, oh, the Sugar Shack, it's like, oh my God, it's terrible. It's horrible there. But then actually, you know, there's like there's a hammock and there's fruit there. And you're sort of incentivized to, you know, talk about how bad it might be on Exile Island. I mean, she was only there for an afternoon. It does not seem like it is, you know, physically taxing to go there. And yes, you had the opportunity to have an advantage and I guess gain knowledge. But again, it's not like that the other tribe sent her there. She just randomly had her name drawn out of a hat. I don't know. I think it was a bag. But I don't know why she wouldn't just say, yeah, guys, Island of the Idols. It's not what we thought it was.
Yeah.
You know,
my favorite part was Rob at the end of it being like, oh, there's one more thing. There's one more thing.
Yeah.
You get to pick who from the other side.
Yeah. But you don't get to see. Like,
and then so it's like, oh, here we go. I get to pick. Choose one random name from this bag. Oh, and you don't get to look. She's not choosing anything.
Yeah.
They're literally just using her hand to choose. She has nothing to do with
How
it.
How will this work in the next episode? Will Jeff say, all right, Elizabeth was on the Island of the Idols. She picked a name out of a bag. We're going to open it now in front of everybody.
Maybe, I'll pull it out. Or maybe he'll like send them off and be like, actually, Dan, hold up.
Yeah.
Come over here.
Yeah.
You're going to Island of Idols.
So, all right. That's most of the Island of the Idols. Let me see if
you're also right, though, which I didn't address. Like, there's no reason for her not to tell them the truth here. Like, lying about this makes no sense. I retract that. My thought process was, if she tells the truth, there's a lot of details there. They could maybe think that something weird is going on. It's easiest to just get through the first vote. And not have to have people be too suspicious, but she needs to come clean very soon, and she needs to like, there's people are going to find out. This Rob and Sandra have massive statues of their faces. You know, they're there. People are going to know about this. They're going to know that you lied, and that's not going to be a good reputation to have.
Yeah, and it's not even like we got a confessional from her where she's like, I could tell them the truth, but nobody would believe me. It's like if you were abducted by aliens last night, Taryn, and then you came downstairs, Rob, you won't believe what happened. I was abducted by aliens. I said, all right. I don't know, Taryn.
Yeah.
But if she comes out and says, hey, Island of the Idols is actually that there are former Survivor players there and they're giving advice, like, are people going to say, you're a liar?
No, it's too ridiculous a lie. Like, nobody would ever think that was a lie because it's so specific and so ridiculous.
Yeah, I think they'd say, okay. And then who's going to be mad? If they're going to introduce that you can't tell, at least now, that it's Rob and Sandra that are out there, then it should be like one of these things that they have on a Big Brother where, hey, you have this power for 2 weeks, but you can't tell the house about it or you'll lose. I don't know what the penalty would be for her, but then
she, you lose two votes.
You lose two votes. You lose your vote the rest of the season if you tell what the Island of the Idols is.
but make sure you negotiate.
Although in Big Brother, I think that they can police a lot more about what you're saying to other people, where there's a lot of times on Survivor when you're not on camera.
Yeah.
So it would be much easier to be able to, like, you know, get somebody alone and say, like, hey, let me tell you what the Island of the Idols is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And it's I'm not the biggest fan of, like, you're not allowed to tell because it usually comes off as a bit contrived. And,
yeah.
You know, it's I think it's best to leave it up to their own devices. And what she did here was an interesting choice. And, you know, sometimes somebody like her, she's very enthusiastic. She seems like a very genuine person. She might be able to get away with it. She might just, I was so nervous and I didn't want to say, but, you know. But overall, I feel like it's, if you don't have to lie, don't lie.
Okay. I want to talk about the saga of Ronnie and in particular, his dealings with Elaine in the episode. Tara, what was your read on Elaine so far?
She was great. I loved watching Elaine. It was, you know, she immediately stood out to me as, you know, a character that I felt like we were going to be either this was her episode and they, like, just really honed in on Elaine. But I didn't really feel that way
for another season.
Maybe. But it didn't really feel that way. It felt like we were that this was going to be more of a storyline throughout the season, that she is a very compelling character. She's got a lot of quirks. She's very funny. They right off the bat, they introduced her as, like, she's such a massive threat. She's going to win this whole game. I mean, she's a factory worker. She's you know, got everybody laughing all the time. I would vote for her.
Yeah, looks like a winner to me.
That's
what Ronnie said. So, Taryn, I want to sort of get, like, galaxy brain on this and really get into sort of, like, next level thinking on this. So we see all the time in Survivor, in Big Brother, contestants that are either wealthy or, you know, have jobs that people were going to think are people that are well paid or might have some sort of a negative connotation, lawyers, people who are doctors, lying about their occupation. Do you think that a person like Elaine, who comes into the game, this is my theory, and I want to test this out, should Elaine come into the game and they say, Elaine, what do you do for a living? And Elaine says, I'm the CEO of a mortgage company.
So that she doesn't come off as too much of an underdog?
Yeah. I mean, Elaine comes in and, yeah, I've inherited a large estate. I have, you know, I work at the IRS.
And you feel like she's going to pull that off?
I don't know. But I think, well, what if she did? Like, what if she did like the reverse of, instead of saying that you are somebody, you know, you're somebody who's wealthy, or you're a football, professional football player, but you're saying that you're, you know, a teacher or whatever. Elaine comes in, tells people that she is very wealthy, that she is some high profile job. That's what she does. She runs. She doesn't work at the factory. She owns the factory.
Yeah, I think
it's been in her family for years.
Yeah, I think it has to be more like an eccentric, wealthy, independently wealthy person who, like, she inherited her wealth, but she's still like a working class kind of person. And so, because that way she can maintain just being herself and being a genuine person, which I think is important, especially for her. I think that's like a huge part of her charm.
Owns her own business, self-starter.
It's something along, like, as long as it stays true to who she is at the core, I think it could work. And I think even beyond just like the first vote, I think when it really matters is toward the end of the game, when, you know, people start looking at like who is too likable to take to the end. That's when it can really pay off. And maybe it's around that time. Or maybe in the, you know, now obligatory, this is my sob story, final two pitch or final three pitch.
And then she could say it.
Exactly. Then she says, you know, although at that point, people might be like, are you lying to me?
No, that's when she comes out and says, you know, guys, you know how I told you that, you know, I own a large corporate funded. I don't know.
I feel like at that point it comes off as begging for money. Like, oh, I need the money. Actually, it turns out.
Yeah.
And so you should give it to me.
It's basically the riches to rags, where, hey, you thought I was rich. I'm actually not. I actually lied. Is that what Russell Hantz was doing? Is that what Russell Hantz did? It's like, I'm a multimillionaire, oil tycoon.
Rob, I think you...
Russell Hantz, he had it down.
You years and years later now, finally coming
Sean
around.
Like, oh, we got to vote him out. He's got too much money.
You know,
maybe you need to like at the merge reveal that you're.
No, I think because, you know, if she's a likable person, wealthy or not. And so if that does anything to help, you know, her get to the end, then maybe, again, if she can pull it off,
likeable, I think. Likeable, but has the sort of like, you know, she's had a hardship. So.
Yeah. And if they're questioning her in the final three about like, why should we give you the money if you already have so much money? Then she says, actually, it was part of my strategy to say I had money so that I wouldn't be too, you know, unable to take to the final three. I think something like that could work. But I think okay. I think for 98% of people, this is not going to. You need to be able to be yourself, and lying about yourself too much is a very risky play. But for the 2% that can pull it off, maybe.
I'm just saying that maybe players need to start thinking about, hey, when they come in, where Ronnie immediately zoned in on Elaine. Mm-hmm. She is way too she's way too likable. She's got this amazing story. Who can beat her at the end? Does she need to sort of lie and improve her story and make it maybe not as dramatic in order to be less, to lower her threat level?
Yeah, and I mean that's kind of what Adam did, right? Like when he, you know, he didn't really open up about his mom until much later in in his season. And I think he, you know, recognized that would put a big target on his, and it's again, similar to sort of what Darren, and it's different circumstances where you're kind of like holding back something that, you know, will, and that's less like a huge component of your entire life. Like, you can be yourself while withholding one particular thing that you're going through at the moment. But I think the concept is sound.
Let's look at it from Ronnie's perspective. And I think for Ronnie, I think he got too far ahead of himself with looking at Elaine in terms of her prospects for who can beat her in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. I think that regardless of where she came from and her, you know, working class status or anything like that, the thing that's threatening about her is how genuinely likable and personable she seems. On top of the fact that she is also seemingly a player of the game, like, she is an active person making alliances, a lot of people coming to her for things. if you are able to snipe somebody out really early like that, that's better than sniping out some, the first kind of like, oh, anybody but me target that's never going to do much in the game anyway. The problem is that if you're going to take that shot, you need to be prepared. You need to have, like, you're only able to take that shot if you feel like you got lucky and you managed to get the people on your side. And I feel like that's how Ronnie felt, but clearly he was wrong.
Yeah, with Elaine, she had a couple of different alliances that were working for her. That, you know, she had that three that we saw in the beginning of the episode where it was her and Tom and Vince. That was one group. And I said this in my exit interview, but typically, like we saw last season, that, you know, the group that's sort of like, oh, there's the that's our easy three people that we're going to get rid of. And that has, we've seen lots of seasons where that halts. In this instance, in addition to that alliance, Elaine was also part of this newly minted women's alliance here in the Lairo tribe, along with Chelsea and Karishma and Missy and Elizabeth's there too. And the Women's Alliance looked like that was something that held as well. It seemed like that they consciously made a decision. The first player voted out of this game, it's not going to be a woman this time.
Yeah, and honestly, that's why I think that Elaine was a good target if you're capable of taking her out. Because, you know, alliances form and they're pretty nebulous. They're pretty easy to break up, especially in the very early parts of the game. And so taking out a player like Elaine, who is connected to a lot of different things, if you let her stay in the game for one tribal council, then that women's alliance probably solidifies, that those other alliances probably start to solidify. And then you find yourself in a spot where, yes, you survived one vote, but you now are facing a big majority that's linked by somebody like Elaine, who is now untouchable. Whereas if you take her out, then those other people kind of go their separate ways. They're looking for people and your group is kind of in charge. And now you're good for basically the whole pre-merge. But again, the problem is that when you take that shot, you need to be able to follow through, and you can't stick your neck out too much by yourself, because then it's going to fall back on you.
But it is pretty wild that, and this has sort of been not on my radar, that, you know, it sort of gets skewed because of Pat got medically evacuated in the David versus Goliath. But I'm pretty sure a woman has been voted out first every season, going back to Darnell, I think, was the last man to be voted out first. Rachel Aiko, and then Sierra was the first person voted out on Game Changers, then Katrina Radke, and then it was Stephanie Gonzalez, and then it was then Pat.
What about Jacob? No, he was second. Right, he was second. Yeah,
he was second. He was part of
the double episode.
And then, of course, Reem in the first episode of last season. So, I mean, that's been a longer streak than four seasons in a row where a man has won the game.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's again, that's where being a fan can really help you, because if you're a woman going into the season, that's the kind of stat that can really just immediately get a bunch of people on board. Like, let's just not let that happen. Nobody wants it to be them. And it's a great, easy thing to unify you in the early rounds.
In my exit interview with Ronnie, he mentioned Chelsea a couple of times as being the person who I got that he looked at her as the person who was, leading the charge against him. We didn't see her say much in the episode other than, where's Jeff Probst? She seemed to be like the go-to person. I don't know if she wanted to send another drink his way, but she seemed very haunted by the fact of that there was no Jeff. What's going on?
I would be haunted. I'd be like, hey, this is I want my Jeff time. I want to be able to do some banter back and forth. I want to see if I can get him to call me by my last name. What's going on?
How did you feel like that worked? That no marooning? Did you miss a marooning?
I got to be honest, I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't either. Yeah. And just to go back to last season, I don't feel like that. Because sometimes when I go back and, you know, I do these long form interviews, I end up like having to watch that scene a number of times. And sometimes it's good. Sometimes you get a lot out of it. Like, I feel like that the Ghost Island one was kind of a good one. It opened with a challenge. But The one from last season was, pretty much a, non-event. Really, no, almost nothing interesting happened.
Yeah, and I feel like I have a good connotation with Maroonings, where I feel like I like them. But when I think about them, I can't remember any that I liked, except for ones where I already knew the players, because mm-hmm. it was like an all-star season or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem, is that when it's a bunch of new players that maybe I know them from the preseason at best, I just like, well, there's just a bunch of people running around. I don't know who they are. I don't care who they are yet.
You know, David versus Goliath, I think, was another one that was interesting, because there was a lot of the, setup of what David versus Goliath was. And there was like a challenge that took place. So I don't know if that's the right way to look at it, of, how do you end up building more story into it, as opposed to just like, here are people, they're on a boat, we're throwing them off the boat, they're going to go swimming now.
Yeah.
It was gone for a long time. They brought it back, but I think they probably overused it. I did not miss it here. I actually liked it. I thought it was very compelling that we sort of just like jumped right in with this group.
Yeah. And I felt like,
ironically, by not jumping right in with this group.
Yeah. I felt like it gave us more time to focus on some of the characters on the show. And that was my favorite part of the episode, is that I felt like we were introduced to a bunch of different people, and I really loved how they were introduced. I felt like I got a nice snapshot of who they were and like what their philosophy was and how they think, just based on the little snippets that we got from each person as we were introduced to them. And I thought that was really well done.
I just want to continue the thought with Ronnie before, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the other tribe that... This was, I just feel like a tough break for Ronnie, that I know that people were really high on him in the preseason. Angie Kant in particular, where I was really thought he was going to go far. I know Josh really hit it off with Ronnie. Do you feel like, was this fluky?
It's hard to tell. I come from Big Brother.
Is
where
a black swan?
I come from Big Brother, where I see everything. And so I have a very good idea of where somebody went wrong and why. Survivor is so much more difficult. And there's, I got the sense from the edit that he was not doing too well. I felt like, based on what I saw, that he was thinking a little too much like, these are chess pieces on my board and I'm going to move these. Oh, and this person's too likable, therefore I should get rid of them. Looks like he like kind of bit off a bit more than he could chew there.
Mm-hmm.
And that, when he went to talk with Elaine, she was like, I knew that this was not it. And it did kind of, it made him look bad. And, and so my perspective on it, my view on it, is that he performed kind of poorly here. And I think he's probably the kind of player, not unlike, perhaps, Nick, from
the Wilson
that maybe in danger early on because he's maybe coming off a little too strongly, and then if you give him some time, he can settle back and he can do well. But honestly, even just when I saw him standing, before I even saw him or heard him speak, I was like, this guy looks a little shady. Like he's like looking around. He's like, like looking at people like they're like he's controlling the game. Like he's
the reason why poker players wear sunglasses.
Exactly. Like he looked like a poker player. He looked like somebody who was sizing up his competition, who was trying to, think things through, standing there, like orchestrating things, and instead of being out there, like other people were portrayed, carrying wood, chatting, bonding with people. It felt like I didn't really see him bonding with anyone. But again, that's just what we got. He was eliminated first. We only see the bad parts because he had to explain why he left.
It would be too confusing if they showed us him doing great.
Exactly.
Like, why they voted that guy? He did everything right.
Yeah.
I think that part of the factor here also for Ronnie was that he seemed like that he had a tight relationship with Aaron, who is a big physical presence. We see this certainly on Big Brother. You have two guys who are close friends and they immediately get targeted like a couple. And it is not uncommon to see, okay, one guy is seen as more of the brains, one guy is seen as more of the brawn. You target the guy who is seen as the brains of the operation.
Yeah. And again, the way it was portrayed made it seem like Ronnie was the one pushing the plans. He was the one that, you know, when the information got back to other people, his was the name that was being read out. And then also, you know, obviously on Survivor, you want the Braun on your team because you're still a tribe. You still need to compete. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was just not a great place for him to be.
But we're learning. So for people that are going to play in future seasons, that I believe that they've already filmed Survivor 40, but then for people that are going to be on Survivor 41, you want to over inflate your net worth. When you go out there, if your net worth is under a certain number, you want to pretend it's higher.
Just casual. I was on my yacht the other day and I was just thinking about being on the show.
Yes. Yeah. And then also that if you are smart and your wheels are turning, you also want to dumb that down. So the ideal person you want to project yourself as is the person who is, you know, well-to-do mm-hmm. and also not that bright.
And also,
dumb rich,
really physically fit.
Yeah,
work out a bunch,
right?
And then align with other align with low income, smart, not really fit people,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to be golden.
That'll help you. That'll help you. Okay, let's talk a little bit about what's going on at the other tribe, the Vokai.
Yes.
And really, a lot of the story there, I feel like that there were like two main stories. One's more fun to talk about than the other. Jason is out there looking for idols.
Yes. I heard Steven talking about this. I think this really struck home.
It was triggering for Steven.
Yeah.
So Jason was that guy. And, you know, when you talked about like Nick Wilson having trouble early on, I feel like that this was a little, you know, Nick Wilson was, you know, sort of taking it all in. Mike White talked about this also in that same season where, you know, hey, you get to Survivor. I think the impulse is like, oh, like I should go look for idols. Like, how cool is this? Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of you're out there and there's this Easter egg hunt to be had out there. But don't go out into the woods because you could have problems.
Yeah, I mean, even on the other tribe, there were people just literally gathering wood and they got in trouble for mm-hmm. being out there. So, yeah, I mean, it's very important. It's a social game. You've got to, you have to be...
You're kids in the candy in the store at that point.
Yeah, you know, I'm the Big Brother guy. They play the game on Big Brother, which is who can linger the longest. Like, you need to be around people all the time. Don't leave them alone. If they're not alone, then they can't conspire against you. So if you are just hanging out with the majority of the group at all times, then they can't form a group against you. And I know that's a very difficult thing to pull off. And if they're annoyed by you and they don't want you around, then you're probably in trouble anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Can Jason rebound from this? That he was, everybody was talking about him. We saw Nora end up telling him about what was going on, what people were saying about him. We saw, going back to David versus Goliath, I believe that, so Natalie Cole was also another person who I think was out looking for idols. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Jeremy yep. Crawford, I believe. He was the one that told her, hey, just so you know, people are saying stuff about, and she got mad at him.
Yeah.
So this, Natalie Cole was in the, Taryn and I were doing a Instagram Live at the Big Brother house. Natalie Cole was in the Instagram Live. I said, please come on the podcast. She was saying that she watches Big Brother now. Okay.
You plan a dangerous game when you deliver news that people don't want to hear.
Right, right. So it seemed like that for Jason, he seemed more receptive and he was not shooting the messenger. He was like, oh my God, I'm going to be the first person voted out.
Yeah, I think it's something he can bounce back from. I mean, it's a very flimsy excuse to vote somebody out. It seems less like people dislike him and more like it was just, you know, hey, we're here. He's not. Cool. Mm. We don't have to worry about being the first one out. With a few more days, you know, when actual relationships start to form, things can change. He's now playing from behind, though, and he will need to make inroads because he still will be the default mm-hmm. person to go against. And it will be harder for him to make connections because of that. But also, I didn't see the whole tribe talking about this either. It was just kind of a core group of people that called themselves the core group of people. I don't know if everyone else.
It's hard because they didn't go to tribal council.
Exactly.
So, you know, we don't really know. I think my wife watched the like first 20 minutes of the episode because I asked her like, hey, did you watch Survivor last night? She's like, yeah, your twin got voted out. I was like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like, you know, people don't like the bearer of bad news, Terrence. If my wife is wrong about it, I just let her be wrong. Unless Ronnie's my twin.
You know, maybe she
was. I hadn't gotten that yet.
Maybe she was going for that. You know, it's Jason. He's from New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's a personal injury lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
I
don't know. I'm just confused.
Yeah.
I think she doesn't know what's going on. So, all right. The other big story is the story about Dan. Mm-hmm. And we saw him. It was mostly told through the perspective of Kelly, who said that she felt like that Dan was that she's a germaphobe, and that Dan puts his head on her leg. Dan gives back rubs to people around the tribe, but Kelly was not having it.
Yeah, and you know, you don't have to be a germaphobe to not like that. And
you don't want anybody's head on your leg, Taryn.
Not without them asking first.
Right. Right.
Like, I would be pretty annoyed if somebody put their head on my leg without asking.
Very understandable. You know, the game of Survivor is not necessarily about, you know, how do you make yourself comfortable. It's about, you know, reading what your actions are doing in terms of the comfort level of others. And so in terms of like that might be how you want to roll. But, you know, in terms of the other players that are out there, that, you know, getting a sense of how they're feeling about things is, you know, really key.
Yeah, I get the argument that, like, oh, you know, she never directly told him not to, but like, how oblivious do you have to be when you're, again, lying your head on somebody's leg without asking them if they're okay with that, for them to be like, actually, no, I want to move. Okay, but I guess I'll say, okay, but you're not sweating on my leg, are you? Like,
right. I think that's the cue. When it's
right.
Like, your head is not sweating. Because if you really want somebody's head there, you don't care if they have a sweaty head.
Yeah. If I ask, hey, can I lie my head on your leg? And they were like, oh, absolutely. Here, have a thigh right here.
Yeah.
And then I laid my head on them and they were like, oh, is your head sweating? I'd be like, oh, I'm done. Nope. That's it. I'm gonna go shower for 5 days straight.
Yeah, and also bad news on Survivor: everybody's head is sweating.
Yeah,
everybody has a sweaty head on Survivor. So it's also that from the perspective of Kelly that this is a difficult situation because that you are also playing with the person who has their head on your leg. Mm-hmm. And then you also, you know, you are uncomfortable, but also how do you diffuse that situation without now making yourself the target of the next vote? So it is, you know, a very difficult situation.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, your instinct, if you're not a very confrontational person, is to give off the body language that she was and to be very but if that doesn't work, then I don't know what the answer is. I think that ultimately she kind of came to the right conclusion that you kind of just have to go to people you trust and hope that they are willing to hear you out and share, you know, your perspective. And I think that she, you know, it's in a good way and a bad way at the same time. There were other people that felt similarly. And so this was something that they could kind of find strength in numbers and address it in that way. But it's definitely it's crazy. It's a really difficult topic to address, even just in real life. Mm-hmm. You know, if even when you're not playing a game, even when you can't be voted out or you can't win $1 million, if you can somehow get through this sort of situation, it's still a difficult thing to address because you know, there's all sorts of, if if there's somebody who is in your life enough that they can be you crossing your boundaries on a regular basis, then that can be a very, you know, difficult thing to manage.
Mm-hmm. So in this premiere, I think almost every single person got at least something. That I don't think that there was anybody that went oh for the premiere. Just to look through the cast, I think that we spent, so I really, kudos, and I know 90-minute premiere, very reminiscent of the David versus Goliath premiere, where, you know, not a, like, oh, where's the, you know, purple blank?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, because I forgot it was 90 minutes, and I was just watching this morning, I was like, this feels long.
Right.
It's longer than usual.
Yeah. So sticking with what's going on Vokai, Janet was also another pleasant surprise.
I loved Janet.
That I was worried about her coming in, but she was able to start the fire. And I don't remember another female castaway coming in and starting the fire without... without the Flint.
You know, I feel like I remember one thing, but it might have been later in the mm-hmm. season. Either way, it's pretty rare to begin with. Mm-hmm. And she's totally right. Like, not only being a woman, but being an older woman, you know, that's those, I think that there's a perspective that those are going to be the people who have the most amount of difficulty, you know, in the wild stuff. And she says, you know what, like, doesn't matter. You prove yourself no matter who you are. And, I really admired just, her confidence and her, you know, she really knows herself. And I really respected that.
Yeah. She had the grappling hook in the challenge.
Yeah.
She was great. So, yeah, Janet, super popular coming out of the first episode. We saw a little bit going on with Jack. Jack seems like a fun guy.
Yeah, it was. Oh, man, it's so weird to me that a 23-year-old, like, yeah, really youngest guy here. Mm-hmm. You know, there's one other young guy that I've really bonded with, but we're the young, like, where's this casting on Big Brother? how come there can't be the young guy on Big Brother?
Yes, that he'd be the old guy on Big Brother,
right?
23. Yeah, he hits it off with Tommy. He says is the other young guy who's 26.
Yes, I also really liked Tommy, but I got a good feeling about Jack. He seems, you know, he talked about being young. He seemed maybe like I could see him getting a bit of a Dodo edit in the future. He seemed like he could be a little naive. But I loved his positivity, and I loved the joy that he was bringing to the show and to the game.
Yeah, but I think that they baked that in, no pun intended, on the Dodo edit. Like, look at and maybe Sebastian from Ghost Island. I don't know, I'm talking so much about Ghost Island today, but Seabass, you know, I think that first episode where I think he's talking about, you know, banana Laffy Taffy and, you know, going to the candy store. And I mean, now that's who that guy was. I'm not saying that Jack is Sebastian, but he did not get that from the beginning. I think it'd be, you know, it's tougher to sort of like make, you know, a wild left turn.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, I think at the very least, I could see like he's just kind of carefree, like easygoing guy kind of edit. But I would love to see him evolve into something else. Either way, I got good vibes from him. I was pleased with what
good
I saw.
Jack vibes.
yeah, this is a much better Jack. What I'm used to.
Yes. Yes. Your favorite Jack on
oh my
television?
God, I can't even I can't believe I didn't see this. It's Jack and Tommy together.
Oh, yes.
They're a pair.
No Christy?
I guess there's no there, look, it was always about Jack and Tommy. It was always them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Terry, did you have any other favorites from the cast on either tribe?
I liked Tommy. I thought he got some of the best content all episode, where he talked about trying to bond with people individually, and you know, it's scenes where he was, you know, in tears and he felt like he was doing really well. And normally when you set somebody up like that, like, oh, I'm doing really well, you then have the scene where it shows that they're not doing really well. And, you know, you cut to a confessional of the person they were talking to, like, I'm really suspicious of this person. Didn't happen. Felt like I got a lot of really good, positive stuff from Tommy in this episode. And so I feel very good about him moving forward. He might be one of those, you know, people that they build up in the first half and then they go like right before the merge or something along those lines. But I think he's going to be somebody to watch out for sure.
So in the fallout of Ronnie being gone, are we going to see that Aaron be the next person voted out? Do you think that it holds?
My guess is no. I think that, you know, the tribe came together for this vote, but there are a lot of different groups that came together to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron is a big physical guy. And if they lose a second challenge in a row, then I think they might be reluctant to vote off another guy, another big physical guy, especially if they're not all very like unified.
But there's a couple of groups, but if Elaine is going to be all in with the women, I mean, yeah, tribal lines could hold. Like maybe the other tribe is going to be Vokai strong. And we've definitely seen that with an orange versus purple season. But for the women, even if it meant they were going to lose the challenges, if the five women were going to stick together and they felt really good about that group, would it be the end of the world if they went to, say, four straight tribal councils?
No, I don't think so. But I think it's easy to
four to five.
I think it's easy to say that when you're not there. I think that you know, it's that's like you know, willfully taking off your safety blanket, and you know, just being like, well, I think I'm going to be okay, so it's fine. But you do have a good point though that you know, it's the women that seem to, if they stick together, they should be able to control the vote from now on.
Yeah.
And they did seem to be on the same page as Tom and Vince. And so if those guys are safe, then all of a sudden you've only got, you know, Dean or Aaron to look at. They're both, you know, fairly young physical guys. And so at that point, you might, you know, Dean voted with you and Aaron did.
You know, just hypothetically, just if we were going to play that out, if the women of Lero ended up sticking together, okay, we're going to vote out Aaron next. And it looks like Tom is in with Elaine. So maybe Dean after that. And they just, you know, knock out a couple of guys. And maybe it's between, you know, Tom and Vince after that. When, let's say, then they end up getting to, you know, a swap or a merge, then do you think at the merge that the five women, the five original Lero women would be the targets at the merge? I kind of feel like the Vokai would start looking at the people that were the biggest threats from original Vokai.
I think that's definitely possible. Again, and I hope this isn't annoying to people, but I come from a Big Brother perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You see all the time on Big Brother, and it's less prevalent on Survivor, but you see it all the time on Big Brother. Men in particular are terrified of women in particular when they get into a big alliance. And we have seen this on Survivor before. We saw the terror of a, you know, theoretical women's alliance on Heroes versus Villains scared JT into giving up an idol. I think that if the other tribe sees that man after man after man is going home, and then they are confronted with a tight group of five women, the men will probably try to revolt and try to.
Well, too late. It's too late now. Because like maybe like, you know, Janet or Lauren or Molly, like they might be on board with this idea. Kelly, that it could be where then, you know, that there ends up being a majority of, say, you know, eight or nine women that are sort of like a cross tribal, and then they end up getting rid of some of these big physical guys.
It's definitely possible, especially if there are women who feel on the outs on the Vokai tribe. But do you want to be the person that jumps in on a very tight group of five that's been voting together for the last 5 weeks? You know, I'm with you. I think it totally could work. And I think it would actually be really fun to see. But there are definitely risks associated.
Yeah, it could be interesting if it was, you know, cross tribal of what would necessarily be the especially if we end up having a swap where they still have the bond of it being all women. Like, would the tribal lines be super important at that point?
You know, for me, it seems like it can be completely random at times. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the tribe lines are very, very solid and they really matter. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes if there's swaps, they matter less. Sometimes when there's swaps, they matter more. Mm-hmm. And so it really depends. And it's hard to get a read on the other tribe if you're not you're getting too much interaction with them, just how much pride they have in their own tribe.
Yeah. Be interesting to if that does hold, where this Women's Alliance that's building, you know, what Rob and Sandra advise players about this?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I just think that, you know, fundamentally, Sandra is not really, you know, Women's Alliance. She's, you know, any alliance by definition, you know, anybody but me means, you know, any configuration of people.
Yeah. To be fair, though, I've never really agreed with that line for. I don't think that's really been Sandra's MO.
You don't? Well, what do you think?
Well, I mean, on Pearl Islands, it wasn't really anybody but me. She had her allies and she just lost her allies. And mm-hmm. then on Heroes versus Villains, she also had allies and then lost them again and then tried to work against her allies for a while. Like, I just never really, like, I know that's something that she said, and I know it's a philosophy that she has in general, but I think it's a philosophy that most people have when confronted with me or somebody else. It's got to be somebody else, but I don't think it like really particularly applies to Sandra. She's had plenty of allies that she was loyal to.
Right. I do think that she will have like a bestie of whether it's Krista or whether it's Courtney Yates or somebody that she would not write that, even, you know, Jeff Varner and Game Changers, you know, she will have somebody that maybe even Michaela, she is somebody that she wants to keep that person around. She did come into Heroes versus Villains, and I think that, you know, in sort of like where it's that group of 10 and they're trying to come up with, you know, who the villains are going to get rid of first, you know, she's open to, you know, any name that you throw out there. But when she really loves somebody, she's not going to, you know, turn on her ally. She's a very loyal ally.
Yeah. And she, I mean, that she was so mad when they got Rupert out. She, you know, dumped the fish, right?
The
yeah.
Fish, yes.
She was
mad about that. I did think that Elaine had a really interesting take on anybody but me mm-hmm. when Aaron and Ronnie were talking with Elaine about like, okay, who should we vote off? And she was the one throwing out like, I do not care really anybody.
Yeah.
You tell me.
Yeah. And and that's what I think this is a very prevalent sort of thing. And sometimes it's hard to pull off, but, I think that what Elaine has going for her is just how genuine she is and how much she really wanted to be there. I think that some people could not pull it off to say, I don't care. Because I think that that would come off as shady. I think that people would be like, well, what do you mean you don't care? Like, why don't you care? What are you trying to play me? Are you trying to get me to say a name? You know, usually if somebody isn't offering anything up, then that's a bad sign. But I think from her, it came off genuine in the sense that like, I just want to be here. Just like, please, I don't want it to be me. Just I'm with you. Like, whatever you want to do, I am on board. And it seemed to have worked.
Taryn, you know what I think is the weirdest alliance that we've seen here? Maybe in a while. Elaine, Tom, and Vince.
Mm.
I don't know how these three people necessarily found each other and hit it off. It seems like they don't have a lot in common, the three of them.
It's the work ethic.
Work alliance. Ethic.
Yeah. They were all hard workers.
They were all hard workers and they found each other.
Yeah, they appreciate the value of hard work and teamwork. And mm-hmm. Like they're all just kind of like, how would you describe it? They're just like solid people, you'd say, that like trustworthy, hardworking. You know, at least that's the perspective that Tom got from them, and why he wanted to work with these guys.
Yeah, I mean, three very different people, very different background, all different ages. Like, it is weird that this group of three came together, and they seem pretty tight.
Yeah, I mean, bonded by a common trait. And that's one of the things I loved about watching this episode was, you know, seeing the diverse cast, you know, and their motivations and who they are and how they were bonding with each other in different ways.
Okay, I want to take some questions from the listeners, but first let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are friends over at Legacy Box. Taryn, you know about the Legacy Box?
What is the legacy
not the legacy advantage.
Oh, boy.
We don't have that here in this season. Legacy Box. They are the world's greatest digitizer of home movies. Now, a lot of people have all of these memories of all these fun times with family on all these different devices that they can no longer hook up to a TV. I was trying to hook up GameCube to a TV, and I needed to get an adapter to connect the cables, and it's a lot. The same thing goes true with your VCR, anything else that you're going to use to try to play these old home movies. You want to watch some of Robin Sandra's old seasons? Forget about it. You need to be able to watch your media on ways that are modern. That's where Legacy Box comes in, because Legacy Box allows you to be the hero of your family by taking these old movies that everybody wants to see, they want to show to a new generation, and they are going to digitize them so that you will be able to share them for years and years to come. What they do is they send you out the Legacy Box crate. You fill it with your old home movies and pictures, and they do the rest, professionally digitizing your moments onto thumb drive, digital download, or DVD. You get a personalized update at every step. Receive up to 12 personalized email updates. I did it for my mom for Christmas last year, and when I was back home in New York a couple of weeks ago, she was showing me how great everything came out. Very happy with the work from Legacy Box. Over 450,000 families have trusted Legacy Box. All the work is done by hand right here in the USA. There's never been a better time to digitally preserve your memories. Visit LegacyBox.com today to get started. Plus, for a limited time, they're offering our listeners an exclusive discount. Go to LegacyBox.com/Rob to get 40% of your first order. That's at LegacyBox.com/Rob. Save 40% today. Get started preserving your past. Okay. Take some questions about what was going on here in this episode. Michael Butler O'Rear Jr. wants to know, Taryn, since when is it impressive to have had 30 different jobs? Ronnie talked about what he's done in the past.
Yeah, speaking about not reading the room, right? Like, I was astounded that he kept going, mm-hmm. and Rob can attest to this, because as I was watching this,
not Boston Rob,
he kept going. I was like, what is happening?
Yes. Well, in fairness to Ronnie, a lot of times you hear survivors talk about their resume. You need to let the other players know what your resume is. And here comes Ronnie, and he says, okay, well, got to let everybody know my resume. I'm going to go through. And he went down the whole CV.
The whole thing. This was if I were working with Ronnie to try to help him find a job, I'd be like, I don't think that working at McDonald's is relevant to the current environment.
Tara, do you think that somebody who's putting together a resume, they stay to a one pager?
Yes. You don't list that you worked at McDonald's. Don't list that you all of the. You most relevant position to the job you're applying for, recent.
Well, I think that the job that Ronnie was applying for was most down on their luck survivor in the tribe.
Right. Which just really came off poorly, I think.
So do you think that instead Ronnie should have said that he has been unemployed for 30 years?
Yes, that would have.
Can't get a job. I know hard times. I've never had a job.
I'm actually homeless, it turns out.
I'm homeless and I had a job.
Me and dreams, right. You know?
Ronnie has done too well. He's done too well. He needs to do the opposite. Elaine has not done well enough. She needs to embellish her resume.
Yeah, it's
you should be saying, well, Jeff, look, I've had a lot of different jobs. I've run this company. I've run this hedge fund.
Yeah. Talking about how many times you've been employed is not a great way to show hardship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. How about that? This is a question from Chase, who says, do you think the Orange Tribe will be the disaster tribe? Taryn, that maybe some of our listeners have not been following the saga of Orange versus Purple for these last couple of years on Survivor. But Orange, it was really Jason Somerville, who first came on the podcast a long time ago. I would say it was like 2014 or 2015. He did some research on, he went back and he looked at everything and he said, hey, do you know what the worst color for tribe performance is? What's the worst performing buff? And I said, no, I have no idea. And he said, it's Orange. Mm. And then I forgot about that. And ironically, that is the color of the RHAP patron buff, is Orange. But, you know, that it's appropriate for the Rob that sucks. But that being said, in these last couple of years, Orange, which was already bad, has really, like, you know, can't find a new floor. Has taken a nosedive from the Malolo tribe to that was the David tribe was Orange. And here's another. They keep putting out Orange versus Purple.
He manifested it.
They manifested it. And another loss for the Orange tribe. Do you think that the Orange losing ways will continue? More Orange crush.
I'm gonna say overall, yes.
Okay.
I think Vokai will be a more successful tribe. I don't know if Orange will be like really terrible, but I think Purple is gonna be more successful.
Okay. William McQuaid wants to know, what kind of head start or other increase in expected value would Rob have had to offer to make you take him on in the fire making challenge? Okay. What would Rob have to have offered, Taryn? Like, what are you holding out for when you're in the fire making negotiation with Rob?
I'm holding out for, hey, Taryn, I'll be your best friend.
Yeah, that's what you would do.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's like a prize. I think I would say, like, all right, you have to do it one hand behind your back.
Okay.
Yeah. So can Rob? So it's me versus Boston Rob, and he has one hand tied behind his back. Who you got?
Boston Rob.
Hey, I could still use my feet.
So, yeah, could he do it with one hand? I mean, for the record, if it was going to be me or any Survivor contestant versus Boston Rob, and he can only use one hand, I'm glued to the TV.
Yeah,
that you want compelling fire making,
right?
Boston Rob with one hand tied behind his back making the fire. So, what do you, would he hold a machete in his mouth?
I think right away he's going to figure out a solution that we haven't thought of yet and just immediately make it easy, and it's over.
He's really good at it. He's really good at it. You know, in the All Stars that we had no flint, we were not able to make a fire there out on Shapara at that time. It was not for a lack of trying that Rob and Big Tom worked for a very long time on trying to get the fire going, that we had bamboo and they were like sawing back and forth. And, you know, both of them like just like they had like a sweat coming down, and it was just so humid and wet that it was just not going to happen. I think that maybe the conditions in Fiji are a little more optimal for being able to get the fire started. And there was smoke, and Sue Hawk would say, oh, just because there's smoke doesn't mean you're gonna get fire. I've never learned that in Borneo. So they were like, thanks for your help, Sue.
Well, Rob has come a long way since that time.
Boston Rob.
Yes.
Yes. No, I think by Heroes versus Villains, I think he got it all all figured out. Maybe it was the rest of the time on All Stars that he used to perfect it.
Yeah.
Okay. Isaac Christensen wants to know, would you rather take cold showers or clam showers, Taryn?
That's a tough one.
Yeah, I didn't know the clams spit water at you. Is it like a water gun? Do you fill the clam with water and then you squeeze the shell?
I don't know. I couldn't. It seemed like he was just kind of holding it there. Like when he was following her, and it seemed like he was just kind of holding it there. and it was dribbling out water, and then it finally just shot out. Yeah. I don't think we did anything to cause that.
Yeah. So, okay. So let me add to the complaint list. So in addition to anybody's sweaty head on my leg, also don't spray me with clam juice.
Yeah, that seemed like consensual clam juice spraying.
Okay.
Though.
All right. Well,
I think they were both into it.
I would not be. No, thank you. I will pass. I will pass on your clam juice spray.
Rob is not into the clam juice.
No, thank you. No, thank you.
He prefers no juice.
No juice. No pulp. Okay. All right. I'll eat a clam. That's it.
Yeah. But not if it's a juicy one.
Yeah, no, thank you. No, thank you.
Did they
spit? I don't know. I've never seen that before.
You know, sometimes it's kind of rare, but sometimes they do. It's, yeah.
Do you know that for a fact? Or you're...
You know, some people are into it.
Okay. All right. This is a question for me from Costa. Rob, would you rather return to Survivor as a player or a mentor? So let's explore this for a minute where maybe the success of the Survivor Know-It-Alls has just continued to grow and grow over the years. Where instead of Rob and Sandra, it's me, Stephen Fishback, and me. I'll even say it grammatically correct for Stephen.
There you go.
It's Stephen Fishback and I. We're out there. What do you think about that? But I think it might be more interesting than Rob and Sandra, because I think that's Stephen Fishback and I want to nail this grammar. Mm. I think that we would have conflict where Rob and Sandra may not. I think that in their time together in Heroes versus Villains, I feel like that they were always in the same page.
Yeah, I mean, I can see now, like, you are offering advice to Elizabeth, and you are telling her that she needs to stick with the women. And Stephen is saying, no, that's never going to work.
Absolutely. That is the worst advice you could take.
You shouldn't be trying to get down to five people in your tribe. You should be keeping your tribe strong. And then you're going to, no, this is the right call. Just think about it. All five women heading into the merge. Nobody's going to target them. And he's going to be like, no, don't listen to Rob. I'm the knowingest knowing all. Know-it-all. I'm here for this.
Yeah, I would much prefer this than to go back and play where that these two men have been podcasting about Survivor for the last 10 years. Now they're here to podcast about the season as it happens. They'll give advice to the players, but they won't always agree on who should get the fishy award.
Yeah, and not for nothing, you'd be much better at the live tribal commentary.
Oh yeah, we would be really. We'd be that. I mean, that would be our sweet spot.
Yeah,
that would be good. I did like it when Rob asked Sandra, like, "Sandra, was it hard for you?" And she's like, "No, just vote them out."
Yeah,
that was good. I did enjoy that. I did. Look, we're, you know, critical on fire making here, but I think that this is very fun having these guys around.
I agree.
Are there any other combos that we should have? Would you like to see them do this more, or this should be one and done?
Really,
this kind of started with Cochran back in Game Changers when he was on the boat and Debbie, who also had a lot of jobs, got to then pick Cochran's brain.
Yes. How about this? We need Tyson and Coach.
Tyson and Coach. I think that would be good.
Yeah. As coaches.
Mm-hmm. Coach as a coach.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. In the Big Brother version of this, the coaches, before they came into the game, were embedded in the house with the players. Do you like the idea of Rob and Sandra, you know, having their own office, as opposed to Rob living on one beach and Sandra living on the other beach?
Oh, you mean? I actually think it. You know, according to the way that I laid it out, like my theory of like how it could go, where they're offering advice about the game and asking them leading questions to get them thinking about certain things. I think that would be very fun to have them on the beach. You know, what we saw on Big Brother 14, where there were coaches, it was a very interesting concept to watch play out, because these people were playing the game on the behalf of their players. Mm-hmm. And so even though those players were not always, you know, up to speed in terms of being great game players, you had players like Dan Gieseling and Mike Boogie, like really playing the game hard on their behalf. And that was a really interesting concept to watch play out. So I think it could be very fun to have them embedded on the beach, but I don't think that's really what they're going for this season. And I don't think that would really fit with what they're doing right now.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see where they're going to go with the Island of the Idols, because the one, you know, sort of like well laid out idea about what Rob and Sandra would do has already been brought in.
Yeah.
So I'm really like, what is it that Sandra will teach?
That's what I was thinking, because it has to be her that just challenges next, right? It can't just be like, you have to always challenge Rob, right? Mm-hmm. But who can steal the hat without yeah, who can eat, steal Boston
eat,
Rob's hat?
Eat all the sugar in the tribe and then blame it on somebody else.
Spill the fish,
right?
So I don't know.
I mean, Sandra, yeah, is good at sort of like throwing people under the bus. Like, is there something that they could do? Like, okay, go back to camp and then try to get the, you know, blame this other person and get the target on them or get these other people going the other way. I mean, the fire making thing is just such a self-contained, clean concept. I don't know necessarily what the other stuff looks like.
Yeah, I don't either. I really have no idea.
I don't know how we're going to get it all in the 60-minute episode or the 42-minute episode without the commercials.
And that is my caveat here for all of the things that we're talking about. Enjoying Rob and Sandra on the show in the first place, the idea of them being embedded or giving advice. The thing that makes that worse is my worry that the edit will not be great because of it. And that if Boston Rob and Sandra are on our season, I think this is why a lot of people were nervous about this concept to begin with, that they're going to be getting the bulk of the airtime. We're not going to get to know the other contestants well enough, and that the season as a whole is going to suffer. I think that in this episode, I thought that they found a relatively good balance. Mm-hmm. I think they could have cut out that fire making stuff. But beyond that, I felt like I did get to know a lot of the people, but it was a 90-minute episode. And so I don't know how it's going to translate into 60 minutes. But I'm hopeful.
Okay. Graham Gates wants to know, is it fair to say that the strength of the Lara Women's Alliance and Elaine standing in it kept her in the game? We didn't see too much of the Women's Alliance before Tribal, and it seemed like that Elaine only had Tom and Vince, but all the women ended up voting for Ronnie. And even with Elizabeth not being able to vote at the next Tribal, they basically have a stranglehold on that tribe for the time being. So now, can Elizabeth vote at the next tribal council? I thought that she was playing for an idol for the next two tribal council, that the idol could be used at the next two tribal councils, but she was losing her vote at this tribal council.
That was my understanding.
Okay.
And that she will have a vote next tribal
council. Yes. Yes.
But in terms of the Women's Alliance, I don't know. It's hard to say because we didn't really get a good sense of when and where and how the vote flipped. But everybody was on board except for Aaron, including, you know, again, a Dean. Who, you know, was he part of the Tom and Vince thing? Doesn't seem like it. He's obviously not part of a Women's Alliance. So how did he get involved? It wouldn't surprise me if this was more of a tribe consensus and that the Women's Alliance thing was kind of a seed that was started this round that we're seeing now because it becomes relevant later. And that maybe it wasn't the driving force behind this particular vote, but maybe it will be important later on. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think it was a big deal.
Yeah.
I think it was a big part of it. And I think that Elaine sort of being in these two alliances, and then really it seemed like Ronnie and Aaron were the two people that were in neither of the alliances that we saw formed.
Well, they clearly thought that they had some kind of
They had a seven,
yeah.
which didn't end up holding. So I do think that you had some really powerful players to start off on that Women's Alliance, like Missy, Karishma also. She seems like that she's a force. Chelsea, based on a little bit from the episode, but maybe more from my interview with Ronnie, felt like that she was a big force in this alliance. Elaine as well. And so I think that the Women's Alliance, I think, was probably the biggest factor here.
Could very well be the case.
Okay. All right. Taryn, let me ask you, let me see if I have another Survivor question. And then if it's okay with you and with the listeners, that I'm sure people would want to hear a little bit about the night last night.
Sure.
We could talk about that.
Yeah.
I don't want people to yell at me.
Yeah, well, I don't want people to yell at me.
I don't want people to yell at me of like, hey, this was a Survivor podcast. Why did you talk about Big Brother?
If you're mad about me talking about Big Brother, it's now officially 100% Rob's fault. Okay, yell at him.
Yeah, so we'll do it, but we'll do it. This is the last thing. We'll do it the last thing. So then you could turn that off. Okay. Pedro Guerra wants to know, we know that Boston Rob and Sandra won't enter the game, but should players take it into consideration, that possibility? I feel like it would be very scared of that happening and not take it for granted that it won't happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what happened on Big Brother is that there were people who were like, oh, no, but the contract says that we would never go into the game. Like, Brittany, I talked to Brittany and she was like, I genuinely believed I wasn't going in the game.
Mm-hmm.
All we know from Survivor is that they have an oath. So I would be absolutely concerned about it. And even if it wasn't the case, I feel like I could use the threat of it to my advantage.
How so?
That, you know, if I have a majority alliance, We can't diverge from this. We can't play too cute right now. We can't deviate from the plan, because what if we splinter too much and all of a sudden Rob comes in or Sandra comes in,
right,
and now we have this external force to deal with.
Well, you always say that what twists do is make there be sort of less volatility in the game, because people want to cling to their numbers in the case of a twist.
Exactly. And I would, if I was on a season with a theoretical twist, I would take advantage of that.
Yes.
If I could.
Could Aaron tell people, hey, don't vote me out. You need me to beat Boston Rob in the immunity challenge.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Rob comes back into the game, you'll need me.
I don't know if it works this early. But the idea that, like, you know, the idea, what you talked about, like, hey, it's okay to lose all the challenges because, you know, we'll have a tight five group of women heading into the merge. We won't be a threat. But if I'm like, yeah, but what happens if Boston Rob enters the game at the merge? Do you really want to be down in numbers when he comes in and he can take control of the other tribe and just wipe you out? You know, like, we've seen that happen before. Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
so we have a lot of Survivor super fans that are on this season. I wonder if there are any Big Brother fans or even super fans who do know the history of Big Brother 14.
Yeah, Nick was a big Brother fan, and I mean, I think that he probably would have anticipated something like that happening.
Mm-hmm.
Big Brother 14 is one of the more remembered seasons, you know, the coaches entering the game, the end game, the funeral.
Right. Also, you know, still, you know, what, 6 years old at the time of this being filmed.
Yeah. But there are so many fans on this cast. It would not surprise me if at least one of them was a Big Brother fan. If you are a Big Brother fan, even if you're a recent Big Brother fan, you probably at least know about season 14. You might not know the details. You might not remember that they entered the game, but it has to be somewhat crossing your mind, even if you aren't a fan. But I have to imagine there's at least a couple.
Yes. Do you think that the contestants should be given a copy of the Boston Rob rule book when they end up going to the Island of the Idols?
I think that they hand you one on your way out after your torch has been snuffed.
I got a parting gift for you.
Yeah, he signed it with a little message to you. What were you thinking?
Smart enough. Yeah, you can go read it at Ponderosa.
You absolutely made the wrong choice.
Plenty of time to read Ponderosa.
This is like the ending of like a choose your own adventure book where you end up you end up getting voted out of the game. You are left with a copy of the Boston Rob rule book, which you'll have plenty of time to read as you wallow at Ponderosa.
I'll see you in All Stars. You better make right choices then.
You better. Yeah. Go flip back and try the other way.
Okay. This is a question from Justin Feinberg. What do you make of the partnership between Tommy and Jack? Do you think that Tommy will intentionally try to use Jack as a meat shield who will get picked off before he does?
I mean, it's probably too early to tell at this point. We saw from...
Will it copy the Big Brother 21? Of it all.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Jack is... He doesn't seem that meat shieldy to me. He seems he's too... He's the young guy. He's, you know, enthusiastic. Yeah. He's not like...
I think Sis said Jack was very meat shieldy.
Yeah, well, he was a very big meat shield. I don't know how big this Jack is.
Yeah.
Sis would say tall. I say big. he's too small a guy. I think he needs to be a bigger guy if you really want to use the meat shield effectively.
Okay. All right. And Stacy Chrisman wants to know, who are the better spectators, Boston Rob and Sandra Tribal Council or Stadler and Waldorf for the Muppets? This was a lot on my Twitter last night.
Well, I went straight to Mystery Science Theater. I guess the Muppets can work too.
They're all terrible. all right. We're going to talk a little bit about the Big Brother finale. We had a very fun night last night. I'm still running on adrenaline from the wild night that we had last night. So we're going to talk about that. Should be fun. We're not going to get too heavy into Big Brother strategy talk or anything like that. If you are somebody who's not a Big Brother fan, but just enjoys getting the opportunity to hear from Taryn, if you are not a regular Big Brother listener, of course, before you're going to jump out, I just want to take a moment and mention it's the start of the new Survivor season. There's no better time than to jump on board with our Rob Has a Podcast Patreon, and Patreon is the way that our listeners can help support this podcast. And we got a lot of great goodies available for you. I like the ability to be a part of our patron Facebook communities and our patron-only podcast feed. We do two different patron podcasts a week that are just for the patrons of Rob as a Podcast. Plus, we have many years of a back catalog of the patron podcast, but we have a brand new promotion going on right now, a patron RHAP pop socket. Taryn, what do you think of my pop socket here?
It's
look
beautiful.
At this. I can hold my phone in ways that I could never imagine holding it before with a pop socket
full 360 degrees.
Yeah, take selfies. I can scroll, very convenient. It's kickstand as well. Lots of cool things that you could do with that. And that is going to be a new perk for the all-star level of being a patron. But for the next 2 weeks, so if you become a new patron, you jump in, then we're going to send that to you as well at robhasawebsite.com/patron+. For our existing patrons, don't want to forget about you guys, that I have sent you on Patreon a form to fill out to get that, because that would not be fair. That would not be fair to only give it to new people and not to the people. You make new friends and then, you know, take care of the old.
That's actually going to be the theme of the next segment for Boston Rob and
we're gonna teach you a lesson. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about last night, Taryn. We went over to the CBS Radford lot to head over to the Big Brother house. You had never been to the Big Brother US house. You've visited the Big Brother Canada lot a couple of times.
Yes.
And we got there, and I was actually very nervous that we got to where we were going to be watching the screening. And this was my big concern, was I had not seen Survivor, and we walked in and they were at Tribal Council.
Yeah.
And so I was spoiled on that the Lairo tribe was going to Tribal Council.
Yeah. See, I managed to avoid that. I did not get spoiled on the tribe.
So the orange buff.
Orange
tribe.
Yeah. See, I wasn't paying attention to that, but yeah. I did see, because then it was shut down before the vote out. And so I was like, oh, we're in the clear. But then it came back for the credits. And yes. I thought I saw the person voted out giving their like final words. And I thought I saw a red shirt. And so I watched this episode thinking, Elaine has a red shirt.
Oh, you thought it was Elaine?
I think it was Elaine that I saw, but I think she was just casting her vote. It was such a quick glance.
The preview.
I think it was like in the tribal booth or something along those lines. Or maybe I was just completely crazy and it wasn't even a red shirt.
Yeah, the issue was in the room we were watching the episode that they kept losing the feed for some reason, which was weird because we were actually at CBS to watch it.
You're in the broadcasting building.
Yeah. So it was kind of weird that they lost the signal, but it was very fortuitous for us that they lost the signal when they were going to go vote at tribal council. So then I didn't know who was going out. And then, yeah, then it came back up like during like the, next time on Survivor. And then I was just like sticking my fingers in my ears and like I was able to not learn what had happened. And for some reason, I think I thought that Laylaw was going to get voted out.
Really?
Yeah, I think that was the one for whatever reason. I think I read something on my Twitter that I interpreted it as Laylaw was getting voted out.
Do you know what it was?
I don't really remember. And I sort of like tried to convince myself that I didn't see what I saw. So I have to like try to trick myself.
I've been trying to figure out who you mean by Laylaw. Yeah, scrolling the cast list like, wait, what? Who's Laylaw? Oh, he's the football dude.
Hockey.
Oh, hockey. Same thing.
He's Canadian. Yeah.
He was talking about that Wayne Gretzky, right?
yes. And so we watched the episode. It was fun. There was pizza. We got to see Ika and Dimitri's were there from Big Brother Canada. We got to see also Rachel Swindler was there.
Rachel,
reporting for AfterBuzz.
Yes, it was funny because we saw her in the screening room and then we saw her in the backyard and she was in a completely new dress. And I was like, wow, I guess she changed for the backyard. But no, she'd spilled wine on the dress.
Right. There was a party also that was going on. So we were with the press.
Yeah.
And then there was also a party that was going on for, I think it was like the family members and also like the people that like, there were some Big Brother alumni that were there also.
Yeah, and people like Bobby Moynihan.
Yeah, it's like VIPs, like a VIP Big Brother party. We were not invited to that.
Well, actually, theoretically, we were.
We were?
Yeah, because technically, by the end of the night, we got a VIP.
Yeah, we were getting like the...
So technically, I think I was invited to the party. I was so busy with my very important work stuff that I unfortunately couldn't attend.
Yeah.
Because I'm just a little too... cool and busy for that. And that's really why we didn't go.
Yeah. So we then, after we watched the whole episode play out, and we won't spoil if for some reason you are going to watch Big Brother or whatever. We don't need to get into who won, who lost. Not important. And we ended up making our way down to the lot to get into the backyard of the Big Brother house. Taryn, how was that? Entering the Big Brother backyard?
It's very strange. I went to the Big Brother Canada house, but that's, I've been watching that.
You were in the house. Canada. Yeah.
But it's different because I've been watching that show for like 7 years now, as opposed to.
And it's been like six different houses, right?
It's the third iteration of the house. But I've been watching this house. It must have been since I was 13 or 14.
I think Big Brother 6 was the first season in that house.
Yeah. So, so probably I think maybe like 14. And so many things have happened there, and I've been watching it for so long, and it was completely unrecognizable apart from just the size of it, because there were draperies on the walls to make it seem more like a woodsy thing, because the whole competition was set up, and you couldn't even see inside the house. But I the second I stepped out there, I knew it felt like this is the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we got set up and you had a lot of run-ins with different Big Brother house guests. We saw JC.
Yes. Love JC.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very nice guy.
I always think he's fun.
Yes.
And then a surprise appearance by Dr. Will.
Yeah, Dr. Will showed up. And I thought, oh, he's out here. Like, he's probably going to stay out here. But mm-hmm. I made sure to jump on it and go talk to him.
Yeah, you went right in.
Yeah.
I have
experience now with these situations.
Yes.
You can't be patient. And I look, he was talking to other people. I let them have their chance. I didn't mm-hmm. want to interrupt. But I made sure that he was not going to leave before I talked to him, because then I would spend the rest of the year being like, damn it. That was probably my one opportunity in my life to talk to this guy.
Your one shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I made sure it happened.
I always try to play it cool with Dr. Will, because I feel like that if you seem too much like you want to talk to him, I feel like then he doesn't want to talk to you. But he seemed very friendly with you.
Yeah. Well, he I tried to be very just like look, I grew up watching mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
He seemed to love it. He turned back to his wife. He was like, hey, look at this guy. Like, yeah.
Maybe that was like in front of like his wife. And yeah. Be able to say like, they people still remember me.
But yeah, it was great. It was really fun.
Yes. But just, you know, when you run into us OGs in the wild and you say, I grew up watching mm-hmm. you. Then we feel very old.
Yes, that was intentional.
You were trying to make Dr. Will feel old.
Yeah. Look,
you were nagging him.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. But then you'd be beating him at his own game.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's good then. Okay. And then you know, then they started bringing the people in, and the time went by so fast. Where I looked at my watch and it was like, you know, 9:40. And then I felt the next time I looked at my watch, it was 3 hours later. And I don't understand how the time went by so fast.
Yeah, there was like a lot of downtime, but also not a lot of downtime at the same time, because you were just always waiting for the next person to come. And it was a lot. And you had to pay attention, make sure nobody left without you talking to them, because they weren't really going in order that made a lot of mm-hmm. sense. It was just kind of like willy-nilly.
Yeah. And the difference between the Big Brother finale and the Survivor finale is that at the Survivor finale, you only do press with the people that made it to the finale. So top five, top six, and that's it. Maybe once in a while they bring in like, oh, here's Ron Clark, you know, or like a random person, or like, oh, Joey Amazing is on the red carpet. Where on Big Brother, they bring out everybody from the cast, even the pre-jury people who, you know, have already gone through press. You know, they bring them out, you know, for press for the finale, too.
Yeah.
So 16 interviews we did.
Yes. And I was very happy because I love a lot of those pre-jury members. Mm. It's a lot. And, you know, right when we thought it was going to be over, because we weren't sure if we were going to get the pre-jurors, mm-hmm. The pre-jurors started coming out. Oh, well,
yeah, that's... I was like, all right, well, we got like one person left. And then it's like, oh, wait, hold on. Here comes the pre-jury.
Yeah. I was another six people left, actually, it turns out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we ended up like getting out really late. Like the party had already closed down.
Yeah.
We were like, well, should we go over there? And then like, no, there's only one or two people there. It's forget it. It's over. And so then we're trying to find out if anybody had gone, was going someplace else afterwards. And then we end up running into the one or two stragglers who were being taken, carted back from the party. And of course, it was Kate, our own Caitlin Herman.
Yeah.
And then
in the back of a you know, golf cart, screaming.
Right. Right. And so, and yeah. And then she was with Swaggy C and Bailey. And we ended up on like one of the craziest elevator mm-hmm. rides. You could see it on Instagram that there was a Big Brother account that was capturing this on Instagram. And I couldn't believe it because it was such a crazy elevator ride.
did. The elevator was swaying back and forth. Shaking.
Everybody was like jumping up and down in the elevator and screaming and carrying on. And I got to see if I can find the it's one of the Big Brother update accounts. They were there doing press on Instagram. And it was really like harrowing. And it was, an all-star elevator with people from Big Brother, myself, a survivor, people from Love Island.
Yeah. Caro.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was wild. And we got off the elevator and Aika was like, very shook, literally and figuratively. She's like, Rob, we're too old for this. We're too old for this. We can't that. What just happened? It's really like a crazy end to the night. I think big.brother.live on Instagram, I think.
Yeah.
here's the audio of that elevator ride.
I am in an elevator. I am in an elevator with Michaela. I got it.
Hey, what is this? The Tower of Terror?
I don't know. It was a lot of alcohol involved.
I don't know. Not none from us.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I don't think we were the ones screaming.
I think I might have screamed it.
Did you?
Yeah, look, when
just
when
a little bit.
You know, it was like, hey, if I'm gonna go out, try to enjoy the moment.
I just picture you like glancing back.
Yeah. And then we got back here and then started and our own Scott St. Pierre started working on the audio. I think Scott pulled an all-nighter that I came very close to pulling. It was a fast turnaround from when I went to bed. I watched the Survivor episode. I started it like I had to I put all the video on the timeline and then had to go and also like start watching Survivor at like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. And then went to bed and then I had to do the interview with Ronnie at 9:30 this morning. So quick turnaround.
Yes.
And then my kids, like to watch Aladdin, the Disney version on a very high volume at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Well, this may be a precursor to them, listening to like hardcore music.
No, is that what's coming up?
Yeah, it has to be listened to at high volumes to really just get the full experience.
Okay. All right.
I'll show you.
You're going to wake up early and put on hardcore?
No, I was just going to start singing Aladdin songs.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to get you a copyright strike.
No, Taryn, have you ever listened to the Wand Off? Here's Taryn Armstrong singing a bunch of songs from 1993's Aladdin. Okay. All right. Taryn, what else? Anything else?
It was great. We're going to be heading to the another rap party tonight.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. What a week.
Oh.
What a life we lead in a big brother finale week.
Yeah, it's who would have guessed this would be my life?
Yes. Okay. All right.
I guess somebody who doesn't drink is going to go all of these parties.
Party week. Okay. So tomorrow, look, I can't party too much because I got to talk to Reem Daly tomorrow morning. And so I've got Reem.
Rob, you think you're cool going to these parties?
Like, dude, too much partying. Knock it off. Be a grown up. No, I'm just going to go out and for a little bit. There will need to be a nap involved if that is going to happen.
Nap time.
Yes. So we'll see. I'm going to try to see if my kids will let me take a nap in one of their beds before they actually have to go to bed. If we can work out the timing on that. But anyway, so we've got Reem coming up on Friday. Rob and Akiva need a podcast coming up over the weekend. And then on Monday night, we will get into everything with the Wiggle Room. Send in your wand offs, wiggleroom@robhasawebsite.com. And then in one podcast, we will have our Wiggle Room wand off. And then we will also have This Week in Survivor History with Jordan Kalish, where my guest, the person taking me on in the quiz, will be none other than the co-host of our brand new Masked Singer Rehap Up. Puya Zanvakili is going to be joining me to talk about everything and taking me on in the This Week in Survivor History quiz. Also, plenty of other stuff coming up this weekend. Why Ronnie Lost with David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis, plus the RHAP B&B with the First Lady of Podcasting as well. So we are back and firing on all cylinders in terms of Survivor. Plus, we also have the aforementioned Masked Singer Rehap Up, newly launched. You ever watch The Masked Singer, Taryn?
I have not, but I've heard of it.
Yes. Is that anything that would interest you?
No.
No. You that? Who would have to be on it? What if you heard a rumor Dan Giesling was one of the...
He's going to be on The Masked Singer.
He's going to be one of the Masked Singer people.
I mean, I would watch
that would be a good get
parts with Dan in it.
So, yeah. What mask would he wear?
He would wear like maybe like a Jason mask, like a hockey mask.
OK. He always
He always talked about wanting to, like pulling off the mask at the end of a horror movie, evict one of his allies. And it turns out it was me all along.
Yeah. Okay. So that would be perfect for the Masked Singer. Bring in the Big Brother audience.
There you go.
They were watching reality TV on Wednesday nights, and now they could be watching Masked Singer on Wednesday nights. Up against Survivor.
Yeah. I heard that it actually it did really well. It beat Survivor.
What? Look, a lot of shows have beaten Survivor, but do they last? They last American Idol was beating the pants off Survivor at one point, I think.
Yeah, well, it's maybe it's less the individual shows and more just singing shows will just always beat Survivor.
Maybe for a while, then people get tired of them.
And then a new one will come.
Yes, yes. They don't have enough twists on the singing shows, Taryn.
There's too many twists.
Too many twists. Okay, all right. So be on the lookout for that. Plus, check out our Big Brother finale coverage from Brent hosted our panel talking about the Big Brother 21 finale, if that's something that you are so inclined to look at. Okay, Taryn, where can people see more from you here now as we approach the Big Brother off season?
You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. Twitch is a streaming site. It's, some people use it for gaming. Mm-hmm. I use it mostly at this point to just hang out and chat with people and just in a relaxed setting and just, hang out.
Mm-hmm. And Taryn is on Instagram.
Yeah, Taryn underscore Armstrong.
Yes. Okay. And on Twitter as well.
He's at Armstrong Taryn.
And Armstrong Taryn. All right. Thanks again to Scott St. Pierre for putting this all together. I will be back with you with Ream Daily. So very excited for that. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.